This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, Khoo Soo Chuang and myself, Sharad Kutin, with the top business stories of the day. The first story that we're going to be looking at is how and why and the fact that New Zealand has dethroned Singapore as the easiest place to do business. And this is a story from Bloomberg. Apparently, Singapore has slipped to second place as the best country to do business in the World Bank's report.
Yeah, so this is quite bizarre because on a whole bunch of metrics, New Zealand has taken a top mantle. I think overthrowing Singapore's been there for the longest time, 10, 11 years or something. And you've got to really ask yourself which criteria. So things like, for example, ease of getting credit, construction permits, maybe some kind of gender diversity issues in there as well. And maybe even the rule of law. And when you consider the fact that Singapore has been there for so long, you've got to ask yourself, why is it that New Zealand has done so well? And I don't know whether this is going to translate into FDIs for them, because when you look at it, at number 10 is Macedonia.
The Macedonian story is actually probably more interesting than any of this.
Yeah,
because New Zealand was number two. You know, and it was number two, in 2007. So it's been high up in these ranking as for the longest time as well. And so maybe the top two ranks are not as interesting as the big gains that have been made by countries like Korea. Korea a decade ago was number 23, and now it's number 5.
Yep.
And you just said Macedonia.
I
think many people
would
be hard placed to even locate it on the map. Went from 92. To 10. So it might be 10 in the ranking, but the leap it's made over the last decade is extraordinary if this report is to be taken at face value.
Yeah, so a lot of criteria, getting credit would be one, regulations would be another, integrity of the judicial system would be another, availability of talent and obviously cost of doing business as well. So all these issues come into play.
Okay, so the question, of course, when we look at these rankings is, where is Malaysia in this ranking, and what are we doing right or wrong to justify that position that we have?
Well, okay, so if you do business, there's basically two things you need to, I think, uppermost in people's minds, because you've got to, look at worst case scenarios. You've got to look at, you've got to assess your downsides. And then you've also got to assess how happy your people will be. And if you're going to bring in foreign talent, and I'm going to be a bit sensitive here. If you're going to bring
or
in foreign,
insensitive is the case,
insensitive. Maybe. If you bring in foreign talent, you want them and their wives and their children to be happy. So schools is one thing. Restaurants, cafes is one thing, are one thing. But you've also got to address yourself about the religious sensitivities. And in fact, the last 1 or 2 years, in some sort of the narrative on hudud and things like that, you've got to ask yourself whether this is harming up our chances of getting interesting foreign corporations to set up shop here. Because if you've got all kinds of restrictions that perhaps a hudud scenario might pose to expats, essentially, then you've got to, ask yourself some serious questions about how serious you are
about
attracting foreign corporations.
Yeah, I think this government has always claimed to be pro-business. Now, just to look at the numbers, Malaysia is ranked 23rd rather in the overall in the report.
Down a notch from last year.
The biggest improvements, so if you disaggregate that number, overall number, you get it on getting credit, it's up 9 spots to 20th, while starting a business suggests a decline. In fact, starting a business, the decline has been very sharp. We went from 59th to 112th when it comes to starting a business.
I find that a bit surprising, actually, because company and corporation in Malaysia is reasonably easy. It's quite painless.
So is it that, not that we're doing badly or things have deteriorated, but others have more than caught up with us? It's an instance where you could be just maintaining, you could be running on the spot, doing what you've always done. It's just that the others are doing so much better. And in the rankings game, they are showing significant improvements.
That as well, Sharad, and I want to add one more dimension on basically cost of doing business. Because when you look at the ringgit decline over the last couple of years, we've gone quite badly from about 3.25, 3.3 to about 4.2 now. And it's not entirely because of the capital outflows. It's also because of local Malaysians selling their ringgit assets, selling the domestic assets and putting money abroad. Why? Because of faith in the system or lack thereof. So when foreign investors and corporations want to come to Malaysia, they look at it and they ask themselves, if locals are fleeing, why are we coming in here, right? And then you've also got things like 1MDB, which also call into question, perhaps, the the structural integrity of the judicial system? Can we get a fair hearing? Is there a rule of law? Are the judges impartial? And are they going to be, you know, going by the legislation, or will there be unseen hands? So all these come into play when you're a corporation looking to invest and making a home in ASEAN, which is obviously a huge economic block to address.
Okay.
Would you rather assume the higher cost of doing business in Singapore and take the good with the bad?
Okay, I wonder about the language you use, right? So we say Malaysians are fleeing. I think maybe that might be overstating the case.
I just want to cite, Tan Sri Wahid Omar, I think a year and a half ago, in addressing media queries about the ringgit's decline, in fact, went public and said that a lot of the decline was actually due to locals selling their ringgit. Not entirely because of the foreigners, but also because of people, local people selling their ringgit assets.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
Okay. Well, I think the maybe it's counterintuitive for the man on the street. This has to do with, you know, corporations. It has to do with people with, you know, with large, you know, with significant assets.
That's right.
Rather than
just the rest of us unwashed masses who don't have millions.
We're staying put.
We've got no choice.
We're staying put. Yeah. Okay. Moving on. Apple's iPhone sales apparently have fallen, but yet they're beating estimates about, you know, what the market was expecting, how the market was expecting them to perform.
Yeah. So the street actually has addressed and accounted for Apple's declining iPhone sales. And this is a smartphone market decline, which is obviously very true. Everybody's got a smartphone now, so obviously global sales are not going to be as strong. They did beat expectations, but it's the first time they dropped revenues in, like, I think 15 years or something. And the other big leg of Apple's stock, Apple's growth, has actually been China, or rather the big story behind Apple's future expansion has been in China, which obviously did not do as well as the rest of the world.
You know, but isn't the global story today, Chuang, slow growth? That every business is having to come to terms with an extended period of slow growth, and, you know, and so the search constantly for growth, for new revenue streams, is always going to come up against this fact, at least to the foreseeable future. And Apple's no different. I mean, is it about the market needing to kind of recalibrate its expectations?
No, you're right. As a big macro theme, you're right. But people have come to expect Apple to be indomitable in terms of their earnings and in terms of what kind of surprises they got up their sleeve.
But this has not been, I mean, this Apple, did it constitute some sort of technological leap, or is it just tweaking an old model? I mean, people are excited by new things.
They broke
how
new ground
was
on
it?
So many things. I mean, they broke new ground on iPad, on iPhone, on the iPod, as well as, you know, potentially in cars. And I just want to talk about cars in a little while. But one big growth sector for them, which is interesting, was in services. And just like that, you know, services went up by 24% to $6.3 billion in Q4. It's now number two. It's now Apple's number two source of income. And that is very interesting, because you kind of think that Apple is a hardware company. It makes, you know, devices that you can play and have fun with. But no, services is now number two for Apple, which is very interesting.
Okay, this is another thing, and I'm sure it doesn't affect consumer behavior, but Apple is still embroiled in that $14.5 billion tax evasion story with Europe, isn't it? I know it does not necessarily affect consumer sentiment, but how is that panning out for the company?
Well, okay, just like that, now Sharad is interviewing me.
I'm asking because really know enough about the story.
So from the viewpoint of the investor, you know, tax wrangles can be long and drawn out, and they can be expensive, but over the long term. What is more interesting for investors is basically new growth avenues. And the big growth avenue was Project Titan for Apple, which is the autonomous car, the, you know, the self-driving car. But so the story goes, and so the grapevine goes. Project Titan is now a no-go. Okay, they've ditched the idea of car manufacturing. They're not going to go down the route anymore, but they might still be considering producing the platform for self-drive cars, but not to become a car maker anymore.
Okay, we'll be back with more top business news after this. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.